It's not that easy being green, having to spend each day the color of the leaves.
So how easy is it to be green? Maybe for you it's a piece of cake. We have heard from listeners who live in the North Woods, completely off the grid with nary a trace of a carbon footprint. And then there are some of us who are still commuting to work from the suburbs in that gas-guzzling SUV. And then there are those of us who are in between. Maybe you. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 10 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Tuesday, September the 9th, the fall primary election day in Wisconsin, by the way. You might have a contested legislative or congressional office on your ballot today. You can do your part to narrow the field for the general election. Polls open in about an hour in most precincts. We'll cover the results tomorrow. But in this hour, we will talk about how you can do your part in reducing your carbon footprint, your contribution to climate change, how you can, like our guest this hour, go almost green. James Glave is an eco-journalist, former senior editor for Outside Magazine. He is the author of the new book, Almost Green, How I Saved 1/6 of a Billionth of the Planet. He joins us from his home near Vancouver, British Columbia. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
And thanks for getting up extra early for us.
Yeah, well, I've got a big pot of coffee here.
Good for you. Well, as the title suggests, you're not perfect. You're not completely green. You're almost green.
Yeah, and the point of it being that I don't think any of us really can call themselves green, even if we do live off the grid and have a minimal footprint. One of the things I really concluded in writing this book is that green isn't really a state that you can arrive at. It's a sort of an endless and relentless process, a kind of a burrowing in sort of a thing, rather than a state that you arrive at and then say, there, I'm done.
Yeah, it's a journey. It's the destination.
That's right.
It's a destination. But you tried to do your part, and this book is about your idea to build an eco shed in your backyard. Where did this idea come from?
Well, really, I got through with the baby steps, and I decided that this is a time in our evolution where really we need to be thinking about big, grand gestures and bold statements. And that's really where it came from. We'd always planned to build a small studio of some kind on our property. We live on a small island. The last ferry's at 9 o'clock. We like to have guests come over and spend the night with us or spend the weekend. And also it would double as a workspace for me. And working from home as I do is, in fact, a green thing. My wife is still commuting, but I'm off that particular mm-hmm. racket. So I needed a space, and we kind of put the two together that maybe this would be a small opportunity to realize all of the green things we wanted to do when our house was built. It's kind of a standard sort of tract home, like millions of others across North America. And I thought, well, this would be a way for me to really get my fingers into the mud and really get a handle on how we could be building our buildings much more green and radically reducing the carbon footprint associated with them.
Yeah. You didn't always, though, live in green homes.
No, I still don't. My main house isn't really mm-hmm. very green at all. This is kind of a pilot project, and a new model home in miniature in the front yard. So my first house, I lived in Santa Fe for 5 years, and wow, I mean 2x4 walls, and you could feel the wind blowing when you stand next to the window. It was almost like the furnace was incidentally heating my house on its way out to heating the yard around us. So it's kind of a familiar, feeling of hopelessness that, wow, the whole infrastructure of this building was designed and built for an era where energy was something that was just limitless. It went endlessly cheap and went onto the horizon. And things have changed.
Yeah. So you had this this Santa Fe home that was not very energy efficient. You did try to, when you went to British Columbia, to do a better job with the home you're living in. But again, not perfect.
Yeah. Well, we were having, it was basically we bought into a development that was going mm-hmm. up. And we were lucky in that the developer, oftentimes with these places, you could just sort of pick the color of the cabinets and the carpets and you're done. on. And we were given a little bit more flexibility, and we could do some swap outs and make some changes. And we attempted to sort of tweak the genre more in a greener direction based on what we knew at the time. For example, we put in a wood stove, or in a sort of in a semi-rural area, so that's a very high efficiency fixture that is creates carbon neutral heat. You know, we were able to swap out the appliances with extremely efficient models, so we could do things like that, and we did the best we could. But you know, ultimately, we're still talking about a fairly spec home, almost tract home, you know, built to the minimum standards, which are not really where we need to be.
Yeah. And what's hilarious, though, too, is while this is going on, you're driving an SUV Lexus?
Yeah, a Lexus RX 300 Pearl White Premium Edition SUV.
And you have to explain why that is.
Not exactly us, but it was a gift from my father-in-law that who appears in the book as under this nickname Padre, mm-hmm. And he becomes this sort of far-off nemesis of somebody who, you know, is very generous to us. He also, while our house was going up, he called up our builder and had him build us a carport in the front yard that we didn't particularly want, mm-hmm. but sort of found ourselves not being able to turn down. And that's really another big theme of the book is sort of the emotional entanglements of the carbon world, you know, where we all kind of know the basic idea of what we need to be doing, but there's a lot of sort of fingers sticking and claws sticking in us that keep us doing things the old way, and some of them have to do with our relationships with our friends and family.
Yeah, you don't want to alienate Padre.
That's right. We didn't want to alienate Padre, but at some point we realized that we were going to be doing that, and it was about how we grapple with that and how we talk to him about it and how we negotiate that particular disconnect.
We're talking with James Glave, author of Almost Green, How I Saved 1/6 of a Billionth of the Planet. We wonder what steps you take to be green or greener. What questions you have about James' journey? 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 18 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Tuesday, September the 9th. Hoping you'll stay tuned. Coming up this afternoon, it's At Issue with Ben Marins between 4 and 6. From freshman to PhD, many students lack the knowledge to handle money properly, especially credit cards. After 5, Ben's guest has advice on how and when to use a credit card. That's coming up after 5 this afternoon. We're talking with a guest who probably used his credit card quite a bit when he was building an eco shed at his home near Vancouver, British Columbia. We're talking about how he went about that and why he did that. His name is James Glave. The book is Almost Green, How I Saved 1/16th of a Billionth of the Planet. And we're welcoming your thoughts and questions for him at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. James, I don't know if you used a credit card or not, but money was an issue when it came to going green, wasn't it?
It sure was, and it's almost a cliche out there, or it's only a partly true myth that green building as a genre is more expensive than traditional building, and it certainly can be, is what I learned, but really just at the head end of the building's lifetime. Like, in other words, I'm spending more now for a high-efficiency building. It's true, but I will save that money, in theory, over the life of the building through reduced energy costs and maintenance costs.
Right.
And so it's sort of a capital-intensive, at the front end, way of doing things, but ultimately the balance sheet works out in the long haul. So, of course, you still need to come up with that money now, and that's the conundrum of green building right now.
Right, and money was one of the reasons why you hung on to that Lexus for a while, too.
It sure was. It was as much guilt for not offending my father-in-law as it was. I didn't have I knew that I would have to start financing something else if I bought a nice new small subcompact car to replace it, and that became an ongoing sort of another of my tortured obsessive compulsive dialogues, because you know, the longer I hung on to it, the less value it had as gas prices began to catch up and affect the market for used vehicles. So I just kind of like, well, do we let it go now and just take the hit and get something else that's smaller and really efficient, or what do we do? So it becomes a kind of a mini drama unfolding in the background. The car becomes a character, actually.
Yeah, it does. And I don't want to give away every last secret of the book, but do you mind? I mean, it was your dad who bought the Lexus?
You did give away one of the big Yeah, it traveled from one father-in-law to the other.
Yeah, not your padre, your dad.
Yeah, well, padre is my wife's dad, right. And it went from him to my own father, and it's kind of a delicious irony. My dad is and my father-in-law are such remarkably different people at opposite ends of the scale in so many ways that it took a lot of adjustment for me to even figure out why he'd want it. So he's a very thrifty sort of a guy. So, but ultimately, I think he bought it just to kind of bail me out, and he's been a tremendously supportive figure, my own father, and we were just grateful to have it all resolved.
Yeah, well, let's take some calls. We have Bruce in Mindoro with us first. Hi, Bruce, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Not too bad. Just got done with work. I was just listening to your guest, and I'd have to agree. We just built a new house in 2003, and we spent a little bit more. I mean, you're spending a lot of money when you're building a new house anyhow, so a little bit more seems worth it. But we built a super insulated house. Their walls are 12 inches thick and full of insulation, and we put in-floor heat with a high-efficiency boiler in the basement and a steel roof rather than shingles on the roof, and all these things, a little bit more expensive, each one a little bit more, and yet it totaled, I guess, a lot more. But
super. Bruce, why did you decide to do this?
Well, I guess just to be a little more green. To in the long run, like he said, it's going to all pay off. All this, you know, I will never have to re-roof my house and dispose of all those shingles. Mm. Ever. I mean, and not in my lifetime. And the super insulated walls, on a sunny day in the middle of winter without my heat on, it can be 75 degrees in my living room. So it all pays off in the long run. It's a little bit of payoff every year, but I guess eventually it'll all come back to me. Well, depending on how old to be.
Sure. Well, way to go, Bruce. I have to admit, I'm so ignorant. I didn't know that I could have a steel roof instead of shingles. So that's one way to go.
It's the only way to go when you think about, as well, rainwater harvesting, which is something we're going to be doing a lot more of as we grow more of our own food in the coming decades.
Oh, yeah. I use it right now. I have a water garden, and I collect that rainwater and fill my water garden rather than pumping it out of the earth.
Mm-hmm. That's fantastic. Bruce, I salute you. You used a lot of the strategies that I used in my eco shed as well. I have in-floor heat. I can't boast that all of my walls are a foot thick, but certainly the north wall is. I use a lot of insulation as well, and I'm harvesting off of a steel roof. So, hey, way to go out there.
Yeah, way to go, Bruce. Talk a little bit more about the harvesting the water.
Oh, if you have a room with a house with asphalt shingles, it's not a perfect thing to be harvesting water off of for a garden, because eventually when those roof shingles wear out, that asphalt is going to end up in your water, and you don't really want to be putting that on your food. So a steel roof is green in a number of ways. There is a higher what they call embodied energy, perhaps, in that steel it takes a lot of energy to manufacture, but the life expectancy is basically forever. I mean, it'll be up there, you know, you'd have to replace several roofs in the time it would take before you'd even need to look at it. And so it has a tremendous longevity, and it's just a very nice surface to collect rainwater that really doesn't bring any of the roof down with it. Those are a couple of the reasons we went with that.
Next we go to Mike in Black Earth. Hi, Mike, you're on the air.
Hi. You know, this is sort of a pet topic of mine because
Let me tell you what. In 1979, I built a house up near Toma on some rural land that I have. And I built it based on a book called The $50 and Up Underground House Book by a fellow named Mike Ayler from rural Idaho. And I literally followed the blueprint of his book. And you use plastic sheeting behind wood walls, and the floor is earthen, which is then pounded and treated and then covered with a glaze. Mm-hmm. That house is still there. You can go up to that house in the dead of winter at 20 below, open up the door, go inside, fire up the stove, and it's a little cooler than the average house for a few days, but if you run the stove for a while, the wood stove, after a while, you can heat that house with an armload of twigs. Now I live in rural Black Earth, and I could never build that house here because it would flunk all the building code standards.
Oh.
And that's sort of a pet peeve of mine because those standards are, you know, almost force you into all kinds of construction modes that are kind of unnecessary in a way. I mean, if I could add on to my basement the way I did up there, I could build an incredible structure and probably only spend $8,000 or $9,000 and have something that would be heated by the earth, cooled by the earth in the summer, and expand my house and save a lot of money. And it's frustrating to me that I can't do that, and I wish that there was sort of an exemption for green code. In other words, and I don't know if you talk about this in your book, but that's basically my comment.
Did you run into any problems like that, James?
Well, I didn't run into a lot of problems because what I was trying, while it was unconventional, it wasn't super far out there. There were other approaches that I was looking at that would have caused more issues. And fortunately, I'm in a smaller community, and I know the building inspector, and he's more lenient than it would be in sort of a big city area for sure. But one of the things the caller raises a very good point, and that is that the regulatory atmosphere has not really caught up with the headlines yet. There's a lot of work being done around the nation in greening building codes on a city level, on a state level. And the way they're doing it is, it's interesting, they're not saying, yes, you can do this or have this particular technology. They're moving to more performance-based measurements. In other words, we don't care how you solve it as long as you get to this particular level of performance in the building. And that is, I think, the critical approach to take, rather than to prescribe a particular type of material or type of technology, to say you need to get to this point, and it's up to the marketplace and your own creativity and innovation to figure that out.
Yeah. Mike, so your original place in Toma is still there?
It's still there. And it's still in, you know, I could still walk in and inhabit it today. But, of course, it doesn't have, you know, wiring in the traditional sense. It has a 12-volt solar system. But, you know, you have to run a few extension cords to a generator if you want to run anything that's real power hungry. But I couldn't do that here. I wouldn't even be allowed.
You probably don't want anything power hungry anyway, though, do you?
Right.
No, you know, and you know, it has to do with a lot of notions about, you know, stud walls and distances and clearances and things like that, and ratio of window to wall space and stuff. I have more window to wall ratio in the house up there than I do down here.
And I'm going to have to leave it there because we need to check news from National Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Radio, but then we'll continue after that talking about being almost green. Good morning, I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 6:36 on this Tuesday, September the 9th. And we are talking with an eco-journalist, an author, and how he saved 1/6 of a billionth of the planet by going almost green. We are welcoming your calls with your struggles to do the right thing. Maybe you aren't living off the grid entirely, but trying to do your part to reduce your carbon footprint. Let us know. 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org. James Glave is an eco-journalist, former senior editor for Outside Magazine. He's worked and contributed to other publications like Wired, Condé Nast Traveler, and the New York Times Magazine. And he is the author of the new book, Almost Green, How I Saved 1/6 of a 1/1,000,000th of the Planet. James, before we started our conversation, at the beginning of the hour, I told listeners about how annoying my brother was the other day when when he scolded me for leaving on a kitchen light when I...
Classic.
And you had a struggle along those lines with your wife and others, too, didn't you?
Yeah. And it gave me a chance to explore this notion of how do we speak to each other about mm-hmm. this stuff, you know, when we're further along the green continuum. You know, there's a million shades of green. You know, if you're a slightly darker shade than your spouse or your neighbors, you know, do you just keep your mouth shut? Do you talk to them? Do you try to open a dialogue? Do you just end up irritating people if you do so? It's funny, my wife and I have this thing exactly with the lights, and there's something about the lights. It's, you know, over the kitchen stove, we have these halogens, and mm-hmm. she just likes leaving them on. It's like an atmospheric thing, and I go and turn them off, and then half an hour later, I see they're back on again, and I go turn them off again, and we circle around it. So.
It sounds very, very familiar. Part of it, though, I told him what he was mad at me for another light that was one of these high-efficiency bulbs, and then he said, well, that kitchen light's not a high-efficiency bulb. And you can get those, you know, you can get those dome lights in high efficiency models too. And I did find it irritating, but you know what? I turned off that kitchen light this morning, so it worked.
It did in the end, though. That's great.
Yeah,
good
yeah.
for you. You saved a 1/6 as well.
There
1/6
we go.
Of a billion.
But your book is. It's more than just turn off the lights. You think that we can all do better than that.
I think we can, and I think it's tricky because as soon as you get into the territory of lecturing people or even slightly go towards that way, people shut you down. They say get lost. You know, I've got my own challenges here, and your life's different than mine, and you know I've got 4 more kids than you do, and they're all in soccer, and you know mm-hmm. the truth is that everybody's own situation is unique. And I would say if there's a theme that I took away or that I'd like people to take away after they read my book is it's really that, you know, just take your life off autopilot. You know, we're all in our routines. We're kind of going about our, you know, our lives are all complicated. Everybody's super busy, and far more so than, say, my parents' generation would have been. And I think that the lesson is just simply to, take a breath and take stock of your routine and see if there's any way or any things that you could be doing differently that would be easy for you to do but make a difference in a very small way. And it's that metaphor of kind of living deliberately that I think is the key sort of common ground for everybody.
Aaron in Green Bay joins us next. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me on the show. Great show this morning. Just wanted to make a comment. I'm not sure if it was your guest or another person that had called in regarding a wood basement. I purchased a house this last May in the city of Green Bay, and when we had the inspection done, come to find out it had wood basements installed in it, brand new house. And I kind of got skeptical at first, but the people that built it said, you know, it's supposed to be a lot more efficient when it comes to heating and cooling and stuff like that. And just since May, we've saved probably about $600 over the summer in cooling costs just because all we do is turn the fan on instead of the central air, and it sucks all the cold air from the basement and blows it throughout the house, and we very seldomly had to turn on the air conditioning to cool.
Interesting. So wood instead of concrete, is that?
It's a wood basement, mm-hmm. 2x6 wood, whatever, instead of concrete. And then on the outside, they did some kind of a Tyvek wrapping with tar, and then they write around that with plastic. And it's supposed to last, they said, forever.
Yeah, and it sounds like it saves a lot of money, too. James Glave?
So just so I'm clear, you don't have any, that wood is in contact with the soil with a kind of a vapor barrier or plastic in the way between the outside soil and the framing of the basement. Is that how it's set up?
Correct. It's like a Tyvek, barrier.
And so the advantage of that is that more it wicks more of the chill from the natural chill from the ground into the basement that cools the air that you can then use in the house to cool your house.
Definitely.
Interesting. I haven't heard of that approach. It sounds like it's taking advantage of the principles of a ground source heat pump, which is to say that the earth and geothermal is the same concept. You can use it to heat as well as cool. The earth maintains a relatively constant temperature, and if you can pull that out, if you can pump air or bring that into your home to assist either your air conditioner or your furnace, it saves a huge chunk off your heating. It sounds like you've got a pretty easy solution, a simple fan that can take advantage of those principles and really save you some money.
Yeah. And it doesn't leak, Aaron?
No, and like I said, I was kind of skeptical at first, thinking that, and my brother-in-law builds houses, and he said, oh, this isn't going to last. Well, one of my other good friends is an architect, and he said, I'm jealous that you have a basement like this, because they last forever, and they're so, eco-friendly, and will save you a ton of money when it comes to heating and cooling. So we've definitely saved a ton already, in the last few months that we've been there.
Yeah.
I would recommend it to anybody.
Thank you very much, Aaron. Apparently, that's within the code, if the building inspector was there. Bobby in Oshkosh is with us now. Hi, Bobby. You're on the air. Bobby, are you there? Oh. She was just going to talk about how she changed her driving route to work and is saving money and she thinks not polluting as much. Did you take all that stuff into consideration, James?
I think that, changing your driving route as well as your driving technique, can make a huge difference in terms of reducing your emissions and saving you on fuel costs. I think the whole sort of that again is about reevaluating your routine across the board. When you have a jackrabbit start, you're drinking fuel. And in fact, there's a whole sort of new subculture out there of people that try to squeeze every possible mile out of the gallon of gas through techniques like turning off their engines while waiting for red lights and so on.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of interesting and fun stuff that you can do out there along those lines.
A lot of people, I shouldn't say a lot, but a lot of people are trying to drive a whole lot less, not only to be green, but to save on those high gas prices and people giving up their cars and biking and such. How far do you go along those lines?
Well, we drive as little as possible, and that's one of the reasons that we chose the our house where we did. We're very close. We're walking distance to our village here, and we try to just leave the car in the driveway whenever we can. And I think that's another factor is really, and I struggle with it in the book, sort of how close to the city do you want to live, or can you live, or can you afford to live? And how dense an area are you willing to embrace in the name of a reduced footprint? So we only have one car, and my wife takes public transit when she commutes to the city. So really, we drive a fraction of what the national average is.
We're talking with James Glave. He is the author of the book Almost Green: How I Saved 1/6 of a Billionth of the Planet. We wonder what you do to be green or almost green. 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 13 minutes before 7 o'clock on this Tuesday, September the 9th. Fall primary election day in Wisconsin. We'll have election results and analysis tomorrow morning, probably in our 7 o'clock hour. Coming up after 7 this morning, protesters captured attention last week in St. Paul, Minnesota, and so did the police in trying to keep them under control. We'll talk with a guest who says police are often too aggressive in their efforts against protest groups, and last week's Republican National Convention protests was not an isolated example. That's coming up after 7 o'clock. We welcome in Matt Rothschild, editor of the Progressive Magazine, to talk about this. Coming up here on the Ideas Network. Talking for the rest of this hour with James Glave, an eco-journalist, former senior editor for Outside Magazine, and the author of the new book, Almost Green, How I Saved 1/16th of a Billionth of the Planet. We're welcoming your thoughts and questions on living green for James Glave, 1-800-642-1234. Toll free from anywhere, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Jim in Menominee is with us next. Hi, Jim. You're on the air.
Good morning.
Morning.
This has been a fun program to listen to.
Yeah, thanks.
I wanted to start out by saying that coming up on the first weekend in October, which is Saturday, October 4th this year, the Midwest Renewable Energy Association is sponsoring a solar tour in Wisconsin, which would give people a chance to visit renewable energy systems and various styles of energy-efficient homes throughout the state. And they could get information about that at the website of the Midwest Renewable Energy Association, which I believe is the-mrea.org.
Yeah, I know that there's that energy fair every summer and lots of efforts all year long with renewable energy and the like, Jim. Besides giving us the plug for the tour, which is great, what are you implementing this sort of stuff in your lifestyle?
Well, we built Mike's call, the fellow that used to live near Toma, prompted me to call because I think I knew Mike back then. We had moved to the Toma area in 1977 and had built a super insulated house. Basically based on the idea that we didn't want to have to buy fuel to heat the house.
Mm-hmm.
So we insulated it well enough so that the heat from people and appliances heated the house with very little additional firewood. And we powered that house with a wind generator. That's still working. We've since moved. We lived at that house for 12 years, powered it with a wind generator and solar electric panels.
It sounds like you were 20 years ahead of your time.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think I was right on time. I think that everybody else is 20 or 30 years late,
right,
to be honest with you.
Yeah. See, our Wisconsin folks know what they're doing, James Glave.
I guess they do. I'm impressed. We're getting some really great calls.
Yeah. So I'm wondering if you think that someone's location has a lot to do with how feasible it is to go green. Can anybody do it anywhere?
Well, I think anybody can do it anywhere, for sure. Just in terms of renewables potential, it's a very site-specific kind of thing. I mean, for example, solar may not be the perfect strategy for us here. It's better suited to the Southwest. On my island, I've looked at the wind maps, and we're rated very good at this particular spot for wind power as an option. It's pretty reliable. It flows in and out of the fjord that we live in every afternoon. So so that's a future strategy that we're going to be embracing. I think that you can be green if you really think about your power and most of us, and also your commuting distance, because most of us still live in the system where we do have to work in a real job. And the farther you live from that job, the greater your footprint's going to be. Green is locationally dependent because of the potential of what you can, of the power you can produce. But then you've really got to think about how far you have to travel on a day-to-day to make that mortgage payment.
Jim, thanks very much for the call. Karen in Whitewater is with us. Hi, Karen.
Good morning. Thank you for this program. Very forward-thinking. I do live close to my place of work, so I either walk or ride my bike, which is fabulous. But we moved into an older home 2.5 years ago, and the heating system was fuel oil, which I would imagine is probably one of the dirtiest. We are looking to change that since we haven't a drop of fuel oil left. And I was wondering what you might have to say about alternative choices right now. I'm not sure that we can afford something like a geothermal system. Is there anything else that you can suggest?
Well, certainly a high efficiency a natural gas furnace would be a good solution for you, and probably one of the more affordable options for you, short of putting a bunch of baseboard heaters around the house, which I wouldn't recommend that you do. Very inefficient use of electricity. There are some natural gas furnaces out there that are, you know, super, like more than 80-85% efficiency of converting that fossil fuel into heat. So, in terms of a central heat system, I'd go that way. There may not be an option for you to just simply retrofit your house and turn it into one of these super insulated, you only need to have your body in there and your TV set running to heat it sort of thing. So I would look into that, and also I would look at getting a comprehensive energy audit done of your home, because that will show you really where you could put your resources, and it will in many cases trigger a lot of rebates and discounts and savings on getting some of those upgrades done. It's often a prerequisite for getting the utility company rebates and the state rebates that are available.
Good luck, Karen. Thanks for the call. Oki in Salem is with us now. Hi, you're on the air.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I was wondering I've got a couple questions. Where is the most greenest state I can go where I don't have to use heat and air conditioning, you know, for the seasons? And plus, I replaced all my incandescents with fluorescents, and people thought I was crazy back when I did it. And I'm in the process of putting a pellet stove in my house today.
A what kind of stove?
A pellet stove.
A pellet stove, okay.
And I was wondering about those two, and if I have time, I heard from a person who's running for office that the United States and a couple other countries, China, was going to go to the moon in 2020 and bring back thermal that will be better than nuclear power. And I was wondering if you heard about this, too.
Have you heard about the...
Yes, well, the Alliance, I can't remember the name of it. Al Gore's organization has called for a challenge similar to Kennedy's put a man on the moon, and that is, he's calling for the United States to be entirely off coal and being very green, nothing but 100% renewable energy within a decade, which is a huge and a wonderful challenge for us to take on. That may be what the caller is referring to.
Probably.
Yes, let's do that today. And it's interesting to see a lot of coal plants that have been on the books for a while are being denied permits as this change is beginning to trickle through. It may be a few years or a couple of years before we see the first ones get shut down. And I think there are a few on the schedule that will be taken offline and decommissioned and not replaced with more coal generation.
Sure. Any idea what part of the world?
Yeah,
would be
I was just thinking
no
about that. That's a really interesting question. I think I'd actually like to write a magazine piece about that.
Yeah,
so thanks for the idea. I don't know. I was just thinking, you know, somewhere that doesn't need either heat or cooling, it's going to be a trick because just of the latitudes that are represented. I mean, I started thinking Hawaii. You know, where you've got the advantage of tropical breezes that come through. There's a lot of design and architectural techniques you can use to naturally cool or heat a home. And I don't know. I don't have the answer to that question. I'd maybe challenge some of your callers to try and answer that for us.
Yeah, Hawaii sounds good to me.
Yeah.
Peter in Washburn. Hi, you're on the air.
Morning. Just tuning in here. I've been living for about 2 years without any running water.
That sounds hard.
Well, it's not, and I've learned quite a bit. I moved into where I'm renting about 2 years ago to do an AmeriCorps job teaching community gardening out on Bad River Reservation, and so it was somewhat out of economic necessity to rent the place that I do. But now it's just worked out so well, and in learning about conserving my water usage, I go through about 10 to 15 gallons a week of water for all my dishwashing and bathing. You know, I don't have a toilet.
And how has that affected your quality of life is my first question. I mean, do you feel like you're not as clean? Do you feel like your clothes aren't as clean? You know, do you think that you're making a sacrifice?
Well, one of the first things I did when I moved here was built a sauna. So,
well, that doesn't sound like a sacrifice.
just like the Finns of 100 mm-hmm. years ago, when I'm starting to feel a little grungy, I just fired up and go out back and take a nice steamy bath.
Yeah, well, very good for you, Peter. I guess we all have to kind of ask ourselves that question. What kind of sacrifices are we willing to make, James Glave, in our final minute?
Yeah, I just, it's interesting. It doesn't always have to be about sacrifice. Mm-hmm. And again, it's almost a cliche, the Green Movement, that there are no sacrifices. It's all good. It's all, mm-hmm. Small tweaks that lead us towards happiness. And I don't think it's quite that clear cut. I think I think that the transition to the greener world is inevitable, but it's still complicated. And it's tricky for people to negotiate. And that's kind of what the almost green life is all about, this in-between moment.
Well, you had a very interesting story, an informative story. Thanks very much for being with us.
It was a lot of fun, Joy.
James Glave, author of Almost Green, How I Saved 1/16 of a Billionth of the Planet. Thanks to Carmen Jackson for producing the hour. Thanks to Bill Martins and Cynthia Schuster for on-air production and direction. Thank you for listening and for calling in. I hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.